It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And here we are in the studio as usual on this absolutely glorious Saturday morning. I'll take a bunch more of them like this until we get hot again any old time. But meanwhile, the show goes on, so to speak, literally, figuratively, and every other way. And we have all kinds of things to talk about. The world is so full of issues and problems and so on. Sorting them out is, I guess, what we're trying to do these days. I call it another week of what the heck is actually happening out there, because it's just so difficult to figure out. And we'll get into some of those details as the show goes on. So to all the regulars, thanks for always being there. We depend on you, as you know. And if you're new to the show, whether you just found it by accident or someone turned it on or turned you on to it, so to speak, then try to stick around for the whole hour, because you'll be virtually guaranteed to learn something in the course of that time. And it'll either be one of those things that we talk about because we want to, or better yet, it'll be one of those things that somebody out there wants to talk about by simply picking up the phone, dialing 904-222-8255. And you will go to the head of the class and we'll discuss anything that's on your mind today, preferably something directly to do with money, investing, year-end planning, overall financial planning, anything. We cover the gamut here on the show and in our daily lives, which are as certified financial planners. We're located right at the end of Butler in Jacksonville Beach, convenient to almost everywhere around, and easy to get to, easy to get out of, and readily available. See us on the website at vanweefinancial.com or give us a call at 904-685-1505. You can also submit questions via email, which is, again, through our website if you'd like. It's vanweefinancial, or just info at vanweefinancial.com. So you're here, stick around, and we'll have all kinds of fun things to do and say before this day is over. I can tell. Meanwhile, it's ugly out there in the market, and rather than having to talk about it, I'll let Adam do that.
For sure. It was an ugly week. It was brought to you, and I say this partly in jest, but by Jerome Powell, and that is not unusual in the last year. A lot of the ugly weeks have been caused by Jerome Powell, who is, if you're not familiar with him, the chairman of the Fed. And in all honesty, though, I'm not really blaming him. I don't think there was anyone, I don't think there's another Fed chair that could have said anything that would have made the market happy. It was just one of those sell the news kind of weeks. His comments should have been positive for the market, because he really basically told us that there's no more rate hikes this year.
That's what I couldn't understand.
And that's what the market's been looking for. But instead of digesting that as good news, they digested it as bad news. And that it just, that's how it went down. There's no other way to describe it, really. In fact, the odds of not having a November rate hike went from 94% last week to over 99% this week. And the most interesting thing is that the 1% was not on a rate hike. It was actually on a rate cut. So it's more than people are more than certain that there will be no more rate hikes, or at least not at the November meeting. It wasn't all of that being said, it wasn't enough for the market. Treasury yields spiked at the long end of the curve and stocks sold off. The Dow was down 1.6% to take it negative for the year by just 0.1%. The S&P dropped 2.4% during the week, and the interest rate sensitive NASDAQ dropped 3.2%. The S&P is still up 10% this year, while the NASDAQ is up 24.1%. What does that mean to have longer term treasury yields going up? It means a few things, and as always, it's a double-edged sword. There's good news and bad news. I'll start with the good. Long-term treasury rates hitting about 5% makes for a very interesting investment. Rates have not been that high in well over a decade, and to lock in a 5% return for 20-plus years makes a very attractive fixed income option for you. So that is something to keep an eye on. This is especially true if you expect rates to come down next year, maybe in the event of a recession. If you have that 5% locked in and rates are coming down, those bonds are worth even more. So you have the option to either sell it or you can hold it and realize it to maturity, clip that 5% coupon every year and get your principal back in 20 years. So another good reason, or another of the positive aspects of long-term rates rising, is that it normalizes the yield curve. If you've been watching the news, you know that the yield curve has been inverted for a long time now. And because this was because long-term rates were low while short-term rates were high. This is not normal, as the market should assign more risk to longer-term investments than it does to shorter-term investments. And so for that to normalize, either short-term rates had to come down or long-term rates had to go up, or both. And right now we're just seeing long-term rates rise to a point where the yield curve is still inverted, but not nearly to the level that it has been for the last year. The bad news about long-term rates rising is that it reflects poor investor sentiment about the future. This happens a lot during economically uncertain times, or when you see massive geopolitical events unfolding, and typically like a war, which we are seeing right now in the Middle East. And I think that, well, I know that contributed to the long-term rates rising this week. War in the Middle East, it just is, it's unsettling. It's a powder keg waiting to blow. And unless they can get this thing settled pretty quickly, which is, I don't know, getting more doubtful by the day, there's going to be, well, there'll be some fallout from this event.
Oh, yeah. And for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's almost inevitable. The whole area, it was amazingly peaceful for quite a while, even though there were random rockets fired back in, I mean, every year you can find some time when Hamas was firing rockets or mortars into Israel.
Yeah, they're like Christmas cards over there.
Yeah. And but nothing on this scale, and nothing to provoke an Israeli response until the most recent events. That was... So we'll see what happens, but that's a scary situation for the markets and for the people over there. It's just awful. Earnings season continued this week with more banks reporting and generally showing healthier bottom lines than you would expect in a banking crisis. I'm not saying that we're in a banking crisis, but there was a lot of talk about it earlier this year when you saw Silicon Valley Bank explode or implode or whatever you want to call it. And honestly, people have been saying the same about several other institutions. You look at Bank of America, Truist, Charles Schwab Bank, TD Bank. All of them have been sort of had their finances questioned by the market. But the bank earnings season so far has been pretty darn solid, with most of the banks beating earnings and either slightly missing or slightly beating on revenue. So I don't know. It looks less and less likely that it's a crisis as the days go by.
Might have a bank lending crisis, and it's very difficult nowadays to pass the muster that it takes to get a bank loan, unless, of course, you're a huge company that doesn't need it.
Or a rich person.
A rich person doesn't need it.
Yeah. Right. And that's pretty typical.
It is indeed. It's like that more often than not. It's just more so now. It's just like the situation in the Middle East. It's always tense. It's just a bit more tense right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to stay a little more tense. You know, when your ultimate goal is as drastic as theirs, it's going to last a while. This and a lot more in a trivia question coming up right after a short break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. Give us a call if you want to talk about something or ask a question. We're happy to have you. Trivia question this week, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. From the years 2021 to 2022, American adults living below the poverty level rose by 59%. Children living below the poverty line rose by what percent? It's a whole number bigger than zero. That's all the clues you're going to get right now, unless somebody starts to do a bracket. So wrapping up this ridiculous market, you got anything?
Yeah, I have, have a bit more.
Good.
I want to talk a little bit about Tesla. They missed their earnings by 11%, and it was due to price cuts on vehicles in U.S. and China. And the reason for that that Elon gave was that there are a bunch more companies entering the EV space, and so they have more competitors, and they want to maintain their market share. And how do they do that? They're dropping their prices. That is bad news for Tesla, good news for the average consumer who wants to buy a Tesla or one of their competitors. That space getting more competitive is the only way that EV prices will come down. And so in reality, what that bad news for Tesla is really good for America, because whether or not you like them, you personally, the EVs are everywhere. I mean, you cannot drive 10 feet without passing a Tesla these days. They're everywhere.
Around here, especially.
It's. I hear this from all over the country. They're just one of the most popular cars in America.
Yeah, I actually think they make more sense in a southern climate. I'd be scared. If we were in Wisconsin and had winters as we did for so many years, I don't think an electric car is very appealing to me.
I think an electric car appeals to the right person as long as you also have a gas car. If you're using it for running the kids around, going to the grocery store, going to work and back, it's great. You never have to fill up it. Never have to go get gas. You just plug it in at home and that's it.
Or you could be like that guy that's all over the internet where in his trunk he keeps a power generator and a cord. He pulls off the side of the road and charges up his Tesla and puts the generator back and takes off.
Pretty sure that's not real, but okay.
It's pretty funny, though.
Yeah, it is.
You got to admire a sense of humor as good as that one.
So in reaction to that, the stock dropped 9% on that day, but it's still up 72% year to date. So, and in fact, the last three quarters, the stock has dropped 9% on earnings day, and it's still up 72% in the year.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Netflix had a much better quarter. They gained 16% on reaction to its earnings. They beat earnings per share by 7% and announced further price increases. So they're feeling very good about their business model.
Yeah, people hated the reason that this happened, but the shareholders sure liked it.
Yeah, for sure. The September retail sales report came in much stronger than expected, which also caused some volatility in the market this week. The market wants to see slowing sales in retail, and instead it's kind of booming. The growth was at 0.7% month over month with an expected 0.3, so more than double. And the August report was also revised higher. 8 out of 13 categories showed growth, with online sales rising 1.07% behind only miscellaneous sales, which were up almost 3%, whatever that means.
Want to hear the but on that one?
What's that?
But last month was the first month since January where retail sales rose more than inflation. So basically, we've been treading water all year.
Yeah, but they actually, if you dig into the numbers, this increase was not due to inflation. It was people buying more stuff.
Yeah, this one was.
It wasn't the prices being higher.
Yeah, I would like to see those things reported post-inflation. I want to see the real sales.
Sure. Year-over-year sales were up 3.75%, which is not bad. I mean, it's decent. It's not a number that concerns you on the upside or downside, to me anyway.
Shouldn't inflate things.
The highest growth category was, in much to nobody's surprise, bars and restaurants. They were up 9.2% year-over-year. People are eating out more. They went from buying goods during the pandemic to buying services during the post-pandemic era.
Yeah, now that you go to the grocery store and you say, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I got to take this home and cook it after paying that price? You're
right,
nuts.
So you can go pay $50 at the grocery store and then have to cook, or you can pay $90 and not have to cook.
Yeah. People are making those choices every day. And the pattern, this was not a blip. That's a pattern that's been going on for a good long time now.
Yeah, definitely. Existing home sales also increased in September by 2% month over month. That was good news. The total inventory rose back above 1 million units for the first time since May. So we are getting some more inventory back on the market. That was the biggest thing slowing down existing home sales for quite a few months. Despite all of that, despite slowing sales and higher inventories, there are only 3 months of supply on the market, about half of what a normal balanced market would look like. So the housing market is really interesting right now. People are saying doom and gloom, and like it's the end. We're going to see massive price decreases and all of this. And you could see some price decreases, but it's not going to be massive.
But we've seen a precipitous drop in home builders' expectations. They're not feeling good about their future all of a sudden. And I can't see why, when there's that little inventory and that much demand, you know it's just related to interest rates. There can't be any other reason, because you can still sell pretty much anything.
Yeah, it's definitely related to interest rates and affordability, I think, which are directly related. Yep. It also has to do with people like you and me who have mortgages that we'll never want to abandon.
You're right. And I mean, people we talk to all the time, you owe anything on your house? Yeah, what's your rate? 3? Don't pay an extra penny.
No, it's free money. The bank is losing money on that
deal. Every single payment.
Yep.
And but they did it because they had to do it because the interest rates were so low.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I have a lot of trouble feeling sorry for them.
That's going to take a long time to filter out, too, because on a 30-year mortgage that just most of those mortgages were issued in the last 5 years.
Yeah, even the 15s have 10 years left on them.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't feel sorry for anybody. If you think about it, that's what's keeping the retail sales alive. These people have extra cash flow relative to people buying today.
That's very true.
Who are paid an extra grand a month out of their pocket. It's probably also people who don't have $1,000 plus car payments.
There's
7 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that those are the people that can afford a $1,000 a month car payment for 7 years. But
the bucket's only so big.
Yeah. The housing story is going to be interesting too. I actually was having dinner with a friend of mine who works in the construction materials field, and he was telling me about since I used to be in that field and I left a long time ago, but since I've left, the price of the products that he sells has more than doubled.
Wow.
Yeah. And so those are direct inputs into building new houses. And so when you think about things like that, when the cost of your inputs goes into it, it really supports those higher house prices too.
Yeah.
So you think that the inflation is just due to demand, but it's not necessarily just that. That's one component. The other component is the cost to build.
And of course, that the inflation rate affects the labor rates, which affect the inflation rate, which are reflected in house prices. It's a pretty labor intensive thing to build a house.
Also, I would like to know the amount of homeowners, even just in Jacksonville, that have, let's say, a $500,000 to $1 million home whose mortgages are less than what it costs to rent the average 2-bedroom apartment in Jacksonville. I bet it's pretty high.
I bet it is, too. I wonder if the retailer or Realtors Association or anybody like that has those things.
I'm sure it's available somewhere.
Well, when Angela decides she's going to come back.
We can ask her.
Yeah. We'll ask her about it. Yeah. You can probably reach her by email. But I don't think that's on her mind right at the moment. She's out having some fun, for those of you who don't know. Anyway, what's going to happen because of all this? I can't begin to say. This week was what I call the shingles week. You know, the commercial shingles doesn't care. Well, the market didn't care this week. I don't care how well your company did or what's going on in the world. It just didn't care.
Nope.
They're going to sell, especially in the afternoon. We didn't stage any wonderful comebacks that we've enjoyed so frequently in the last 12 months. And speaking of the last 12 months, what we're noticing a pattern that a lot of people, I think if you dug into it, you might feel the same way. When we're having client reviews, because it's that time of year, you know, it's right after the third quarter ends, and we always send people cards to say check in once a quarter at the minimum. A lot of people are coming in and we look at the results. Well, the quarter we just ended, it was underwater no matter what. The only way you could have made money in the third quarter this year was by not investing.
Well, you could invest. It just had to be in money markets and treasuries.
Right. But if you had any equities and some bonds, you just didn't have a prayer of making money.
Or a bond fund. If you owned a fund, it went down.
But year to date, you look at the numbers that we come up with year to date, and they're, except for the Dow, they're looking real strong. But what's really surprising is if you go back 12 months to September 30th of 22 to September 30th of 23, that was a spectacular year.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of results between up 8% and up 18%.
I'm thinking we should adopt the government fiscal year and just call it a day.
Works for me.
Okay. Well, we got a lot more on the other side, and we can discuss the trivia questions and a bunch of other things. I've got a little little blurb about other things that are not well in the electric vehicle market. So there's going to be more shakeout than just Tesla by the time this thing comes to fruition. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question is still out there, and the lines are still open, 904-222-8255. Between the years 2021 and 2022, 59% more adults entered poverty. In other words, fell below the poverty minimum in those 2 years. What percentage of children did that? And I'm going to even cut you some slack and say there were more children than there were, percentage-wise, than there were adults. So now you know you've got a base that isn't zero. It's 59.
Yeah, and just to be clear, that's a growth rate in poverty. Mm-hmm. There are not 59% of Americans living in poverty.
No.
In fact, it's way, way,
way below. Less than that. In fact, I have those numbers, too, for when somebody gets it right. A couple observations on the electric vehicle front, and Adam and I were talking about this, not knowing exactly what the impetus for some of this stuff is, but GM has delayed the opening of a second electric truck plant in Michigan. Ford temporarily cut one of three shifts of its Michigan plant. They were building the F-150 Lightnings, which are sold out. So if that doesn't make any sense, then the only thing we could figure out is there must be a problem with parts supply because some of the parts manufacturing plants are on strike right now. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to say on any of this exactly how hard the strike is hitting these companies, but it's not been good for electric vehicle production. And long run, you just wonder, can this wind up being a real positive for pricing? Is it going to create more competition, bringing pricing down, or are they going to have to be recouping their costs? Because if you're following the strike at all with the UAW, Ford got up to about 20%. The union originally wanted about 40.
Yeah, something like that.
Ford got up about 20, and they left them alone a little bit. And then Stellantis and GM are now looking at more like 23% increases. So they want Ford to come up there. And one of the things the UAW did, and this one, I guess, from a tactical standpoint as a union, they struck the plant in Kentucky that builds the F-150s, which, as everybody knows, that's the number one thing in Ford's lineup. That plant has a profitability while it's operating efficiently of $30 million a day.
It's just and it
shut
crazy.
Down. Isn't it nuts?
It is.
So let's just say that one has to be hurting them a lot. And I don't know how much to expect the union. Those of you who have dealt with unions, you know they can be very unreasonable. And that's just the way it is. You go to war with the army you've got. But the big ones amass strike funds that they hold back for paying people who are on strike. But they only have so much money. And they're only willing to spend so much money. And this thing's been dragging out and getting bigger. There's a lot of people walking picket lines right now. I just don't know what their financial ability to keep these people on strike very long is. But until the pain gets bad enough, they're going to stay on strike from the looks of things. Mm-hmm. They're being very militant right now in their demands.
Well, they know they're not going to find a more favorable political climate probably in the next 20 years, so they might as well do it.
Yeah, and then somebody will have to write them a book and send it to all the union members afterwards about all the reasons Joe Biden was hard on unions with his policies over the years, but I digress. Anyway, it is what it is. They're still on strike, and I don't see how we're going to come out of this by having vehicles cost less.
Well, the fact is they don't set the prices. They can set the prices, yeah.
MSRPs.
Yeah, but then the market is going to determine what mm-hmm. people are willing to pay for F-150, not the dealer, not the they can set it at whatever they want, but there's a certain point where they won't sell any, and there's a certain point where their sales will decline, and they want their sales to go up every year, so they're going to have to deal with market dynamics to figure out what the pricing is. The one thing that I wanted to mention is that you may not believe this, but the average American family is now a millionaire.
Yeah. And
has achieved
it'll make sense in a minute.
Yep. The Federal Reserve does a survey every 3 years about consumer finances. And the latest one was done in 2022, or the results were from 2022. And the mean net worth of the average American household, even adjusting for inflation, was $1.06 million in 2022. And that's up 23% from 2019. Now, you may think that sounds crazy, but when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Let's dig in a little bit more and look at the median number, which is the middle household. So if you took, if the average, you add up everyone and divide by the number of households and you get the average. The median, you just look at the middle number, and that household has a net worth closer to $193,000. So why the big discrepancy between the mean and the median? Well, Elon Musk,
we were Jeff just
Bezos,
talking about,
that's yeah, right. Bill Gates, yeah. Those people have so much money, it skews that figure, that average figure, way up, whereas the middle family is much, much lower than that.
Yeah, if you're looking at the median household net worth, Elon Musk has a value of one, and Adam Van Wee has a value of one, and everybody else has a value of
right,
one.
Right.
But where you and Elon part ways is is when you count actual dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they say figures lie and liars figure. If you're trying to make a point and you're a clever enough mathematician, you can find some statistics somewhere to help you make your point. But you got to be careful. I really detest in the housing market. I don't know that I have a better way, but I don't like that statistic about median house price, because that means as many sold for more and the equal number sold for less. But you could have the same situation where you could have all the big houses going for 10 million up and all the other houses going for 150, and your median will still be wherever the median is. It doesn't raise it. So
well,
it doesn't explain.
I think it's better than the average, though,
well,
because
I've argued it both ways. In fact, I started writing a blog once about why it should turn out, and I wound up convincing myself it shouldn't, so I threw it away.
Okay. So the average, the American households in the top 10% have a net worth, an average net worth of about $6.6 million. So if you're anywhere below that, I'm sorry, you're probably not in the 10%.
Darn it.
I know. It's a bummer.
You know what? The other part of that is if you're in the next 25%, you're fine.
Yeah,
you don't
that's
have to be
true.
Top 10.
That's true.
In fact, there's a lot of pressure that comes with that, so I'm told.
Okay.
Anyway, like I said, if you're clever, all right, more than 59% of the nation's children fell below the poverty line between 21 and 22. And if you can tell us what it is or you just want to take a guess, so be it. All right. Should you use a financial advisor? Now, there's a broad question. I would say probably no, if you have absolutely no money and no prospects and no ambition. Other than that, you ought to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people kind of fall in the other than that category. So some of the things that we know to be true, 71% of Americans believe that they are doing an inadequate job of financial planning. 71%. How many Americans work with an advisor? 29%. Hello? Anybody want to do some math here? If you think you're doing such a terrible job, why don't you get some help? Well, there are a lot of reasons for that. A lot of people have been burned. A lot of people have just heard things. All you got to do is take any prospect and say, Bernie Madoff was my best friend and you lost a job like that. That stuff doesn't go on much, and those are not the same kind of people that you would deal with. So if you're thinking that you probably are inadequately doing it yourself, but you're not working with somebody, take advantage of some of the offers you get, like ours, where you can spend an hour with us, and what it costs you is your time. That's it, and we can tell you whether or not. The other thing that way, way, way too many people don't realize is the people who work over a long period of time with an advisor, wind up with about 15% more money in retirement than the ones who don't. That's because annually, working with an advisor generally produces results between about 1.5% and 3.5% more than those who don't work with one. That said, what kind of advisor would you work with? Well, I have a little ditty here. According to Massachusetts Mutual, it was Northwestern Mutual, I'm sorry, Milwaukee, I slandered you. There are six things not to do when you're selecting a financial advisor. Number one, and it deserves the spot as number one, don't hire a non-fiduciary financial advisor. Okay, big word, right? A lot of people know it, a lot of people don't. A fiduciary is mandated by law to put his client's best interests ahead of his own. We have always done that. We would never consider doing it any other way. And quite frankly, if you do that, you both wind up better off. And I can't imagine why people wouldn't adopt it. But that means you can't sell products and can't take commissions. So I showed Adam a little earlier. I got one of those rubber chicken dinner flyers in the mail the other day by someone who had initials after his name, CFF. And it stands for Certified Financial Fiduciary. And he's an insurance salesman. You can't, in my world, you can't have the F for fiduciary behind your name if you also accept commissions. That's just one thing to look out for. There are five other things not to do when hiring an advisor, and I think we'll wait till after the break to handle them. Some of these are more important than others, but I want to hit them all. But don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And this trivia question is still open. More than 59% additional children fell under the poverty line between the years 2021 and 2022. What percentage increase did America's children experience in that time? It's not a very pretty sight, by the way. We'll have to talk about that later. All right, the six things not to do, according to Northwestern Mutual, when you're going out to hire an advisor. Number one, said don't hire a non-fiduciary advisor, which is very interesting because Northwestern Mutual's own salespeople call themselves financial advisors, and they're all non-fiduciary. Well, they all were. I don't know how many still are because their job is to sell life insurance, their primary function. All right, number two. Don't simply hire the first financial advisor you find. And we generally, as you've heard probably many times, say that you should interview at least three people who have the fee-only advisories, fiduciary, and so on, and find one that you believe fits well with you. Now, if you come to us, of course, you can save the other two, but that's just me being funny. Of course, it's the right thing to do. You want to make sure that what you hear from all three of them is either real consistent or inconsistent. Then you've got different kinds of work to do. Number three, don't partner with an advisor whose strategy doesn't align. You know there are people out there who have a lot of cookie-cutter portfolios. They talk to you for a while and say, all right, you're a medium rare, so to speak. And they put you in the medium rare category. Or you're a risk taker and they put you in a high risk thing, even though you might be 70 years old. You don't do that. If you don't agree with the outlook and the philosophy of the advisor, there are plenty more of them out there. Number four, don't forget to ask about credentials. This one, there are something like 78 different versions of financial advisors by name. Most of them are effectively meaningless. There are things that you can get by going to a seminar and paying $50 for the certificate to be printed, and you can use your name on them. But real credentials include I'll read you the last line. Some advisors go a step further and become a certified financial planner or CFP. Well, if that's the step further, we're already there. Both Adam and I are CFPs and have been for a good long time. But underneath that, We both have technical undergraduate degrees. We both have MBAs, and we both have decades of experience outside financial advising and inside. So it is very important to find out who this person is if you're going to entrust your money with him or her. Number five, don't misunderstand advisor fees. This one is real important. The terms that are used incorrectly, or I'd say on purpose incorrectly, the main one is fee-based. So people hear fee-based, and what do they hear? They hear fee. The term fee only has one good following word, only. Fee only. That means there's never a commission. Fee-based is a big old smokescreen to try to convince you you're dealing with a fee-only advisor, when in actuality there can be commissions in the past, and you cannot trust what your ears are hearing unless you understand it thoroughly. Number six, don't hire an advisor that hasn't been vetted. Well, that kind of speaks for itself. If somebody hangs a shingle today and you go see them tomorrow and they've never done this before, you're not likely to have excellent results. So look for a good long track record. Look for some honesty. Talk to other people, and so on. We have a phone call. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Hey, enjoying the program.
Thanks so much.
You know, you talked about if people are doing the same things and expecting different results, it just doesn't work. I just walked past my mother goose who laid all of her eggs last year under the pine trees, and none of them hatched. She's doing the same thing. So I put the radio up to her ear, but I don't think she comprehended. I just don't think it registered.
Hey, you can lead a goose to water, but you can't make her drink.
Or a horse to water, but you can't make
whatever.
Her drink. Yeah, for sure. Hey, I wanted to take a guess at the trivia.
Shoot.
83%.
Well, that's a good guess, but unfortunately, you're too low.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Oh, wow.
Sad,
wow,
isn't it?
Wow, wow. That's sad. That's really sad, fellas.
You know, you can blame a lot of things. Of course, you can't start laying blame without using the word COVID. It would be impossible. But then again, coming back out of it as we were in 21 and 22, you'd think that things might have gotten better a little quicker with some better policies on the line. That's just an opinion with a look back.
Oh, no, I'm with you on that. Well, anyhow, I thought I'd take a stab at it, and I'll keep putting the phone up to the goose on Saturdays and see if she can figure it out.
There you go. What do you call a half a bracket? We've got a half a bracket now. Right. Thanks for the call. Have a good weekend.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Yeah, it is sad. Breaks my heart to even hear things like that. All right. Anything you want
to? Yeah, just real quick. I wanted to talk about the Joe's Jog for a Cure.
Oh, yeah. I meant to do that in the last break. Sorry.
We're sponsoring. It's on November 4th in Nocatee. It supports the Mulligan Lab at St. Jude's that is doing research into the specific type of leukemia that took our friend Joe. Joe was a dear personal friend of ours, and he was gone way too early with childhood cancer. So if you're into doing 5Ks, or there's also a 1 mile walk, come out and join us on November 4th. You can register online at joestrong.org.
Okay, good. Do you want to toot your family horn? Didn't you just get it? About a nutcracker valley.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll save that for next week.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll do that later.
It's some things going on in the local space here. All right. You know, I can't really let a show go completely this time of year without mentioning some other aspects of year-end planning. It's the 21st of October already, so here we are down to one show left in October. And then you know what happens in November and December. It just keeps sliding by. You know, in our house, we sort of joke about it. The standard line is, you know what it is? Yeah, it's Thursday night. And it seems like every 2 to 3 days, it's Thursday night. That's how fast time goes normally. it really compresses between now and the end of the year. So one of the things that we as financial planners start talking about and working on a lot right now is required minimum distributions and beneficiary designations, which are kind of all rolled into one. Beneficiary designations are easily forgotten, shall we say, and yet they're critically of critical importance. And some of the rules have been changing, but more than anything, oh, excuse me, going to interrupt for the phone. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
What's
How
happening?
We doing?
Great. What's cooking?
All right. I'm glad you're doing great. These are bleak times here.
They are indeed. We'll get over
Yeah, I know time is running short. I'll take a quick stab, if
sure.
I may. I'm going to say 225%.
Now we have a bracket, because that's too high.
Okay.
Anybody wants to take a stab now, you got it narrowed down a little bit.
Great. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Mike.
Thanks for the call. Anyway, that what things use beneficiary designations? Well, the obvious one is your will. If you write a will, what's it about? It's about passing your assets to the people that you want to get them, called your designated beneficiaries. There are not, unfortunately, 50% of the people in this country who even have a will, and that includes lawyers, and I don't hesitate to point that out. If you don't have one, who makes your final decisions for you? And by final, I mean the ones that start the day after you die. Well, that would be the state of residence. And in this case, for most of you, it would be Florida. Now, I don't think if we asked 1,000 people on the street if they wanted the state of Florida to distribute their assets as the state thought they should, rather than as the people thought they should, I don't think you'd get any takers on that. Well, that's essentially what you're opting for. You're opting to have the state take over the responsibility for distribution of assets unless you draw a will. Well, then you take it another step to the trust, and trusts also have beneficiaries. People say, do you have a will or trust? There is in Florida, there's good reason to have both, but the will is called a pour-over. It's a simple will, and all it basically says is, if I forgot to put anything in the trust, assume that I was about to do it and just at my death, put it over there, then the trust takes over. The big thing about the trust is that it avoids probate, which can be costly, like 5 or 6% of the entire estate, and can take a long time, from weeks and months to even years if it's a bit more complicated. The question there is, do you want to pay now or do you want to pay later? Paying an attorney to do a trust costs you money now and saves you money later by not having to probate. If you want to be the nicest you can be to your kids, do a trust. Trust me on that one. Because they will be very, very grateful that you did the planning for them, and then it gets distributed as is. There are a bunch more. I'm going to list them but talk about them over the next couple of shows. If you have a 401k, 403b, or any other kind of defined contribution plan, you will have designated beneficiaries on it. If you have a designated, or if you have a defined distribution, a defined benefit plan, such as a pension, it also has beneficiaries on it. So if you have any retirement savings at all, then you're going to need these things. And we'll pick up on it again next week, right where we left off. 138% of additional of America's children fell below the poverty line during that time. And I don't know at what rate they're getting out of it. Maybe I can find something by next week. Thanks for listening. We'll be here same time next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.